Sergeant Benton sits down at his desk in unit headquarters, facing a task more dreadful than fighting Cybermen, Autons, or demonic stone gargoyles, filing the obligatory field report. "So much for off the record," he mutters with a resigned sigh, recalling the look on the Brigadier's face yesterday evening, upon spying him and Captain Yates dressed in. "Well, best not to dwell on it," he tells himself, as reluctant hands fall into a 10-finger lockstep. The purpose of this report is to document the surveillance of the asset herein identified for security purposes as Miss G on the night of December 7th. It is based on events witnessed directly by the author of this report. Stopping for a moment, he complains, "Never could type without reading aloud. And Miss G, bloody hell, why can't I just write Miss Josephine Grant? We all know and care about her." As he utters these last words, Benton is reminded of how this impromptu adventure with Captain Yates began yesterday. "Carry on, Sergeant," he says with his quiet imitation of the Brigadier's clipped delivery, as he types up the background for the report. "At approximately 1400 hours on December 7th of this year, Miss G stated that she was due to meet with a mysterious gentleman later that evening. Because Miss G is a valuable unit asset with top security clearances, it was decided by the author of this report, in consultation with his immediate superior, Captain Mike Yates, that deep cover surveillance was in order. Given the time-sensitive nature of the situation, it was further decided that going through official channels was out of the question, and that the author of this report and his immediate superior were the only men for this job. At no point did personal regard for Miss G influence the decisions of either Captain Yates or Sergeant Benton in the planning or execution of this mission." As Benton guiltily considers the words "personal regard" in that last sentence, he remembers Captain Yates asking him, before they agreed upon their stakeout of Miss G, "Why are we following this girl?" "Girl?" Benton had replied to him. "Don't you mean young woman, as in Miss Grant, our colleague and friend?" "No, Sergeant," Captain Yates then said to him in a low tone, before adding, "I mean girl, as in attractive bird whom we've both been foolishly trying to woo." Of course, there have been a few hinted at half-dates for him and Miss Grant, but Benton also suspected, or knew, that she fancied Captain Yates more than him. Perhaps that was why he chose Yates to join him on this mission, to track Miss Grant on her date with one Colonel Henry Rehnquist III, who served in the British Army. Something was off about this suitor, who has a perfect service record, and whose sudden wooing of Miss Grant, and her immediate acceptance to go on a date with the man, struck both him and Captain Yates as irrefutable evidence that the individual holds some sort of mind control power over their fair-haired colleague. Benton next starts to write up the requisite mission details part of the report, mechanically typing, "For purposes of deep cover, the author of this report and his immediate superior recognized the need to abandon standard military uniforms. Consequently, given the pressing nature of the mission and the general lack of civilian attire available in Unit HQ, we had no choice but to borrow clothing from Unit's scientific advisor, herein referred to as Dr. Smith. The items in particular were a gentleman's blue frilled shirt and purple velvet smoking jacket, and a woman's short red evening dress, along with a pair of silver heels. Here, the author must note that although neither he nor his immediate superior requested permission to borrow said clothing from Dr. Smith, both parties agreed that he would approve, particularly given his own affection for the asset Miss G." Benton wonders to himself why the doctor was in possession of a dress that would fit Captain Yates perfectly, scandalously asking himself if perhaps Unit's face-changing scientific advisor himself had once worn said clothing in a past body, before rationalizing that it must have belonged to a former traveling companion of the female variety. Upon seeing the captain in said attire, he immediately cursed himself for not asking the decidedly more attractive Corporal Bell to be his partner in this mission. Nevertheless, he knew Captain Yates was the man, or in this situation, the woman for the job, since the Pepper Pot, the exclusive club to which Colonel Rehnquist was taking Miss Grant, only admitted couples. Moreover, couples for whom one of them could actually dance. After failing to demonstrate to Benton that he was the better dancer, meaning he should be the one wearing the doctor's suit, Captain Yates had attempted to pull rank, characteristically claiming RHIP. Rank has its privileges. However, Benton proceeded to show him that he was the superior ballroom dancer by demonstrating a few deft moves of the foxtrot, leading Yates to sulk on his way toward his quarters with a bottle of shaving cream and a blade to take care of his conspicuously hirsute legs. After snickering to himself at this memory, Benton straightens his frame and poises his fingers once more upon the keys of the dreary typewriter, proceeding into the tracking the asset part of the report, as he writes, "Once Captain Yates, working under the codename Nancy, and I were admitted into the Pepper Pot, we took cover in the crowd. On a side note, I had donned a fake moustache, befitting a world-class dancer, in the hope that Miss G would not recognize me. As the dancing took place, we watched Miss G and Colonel Rehnquist demonstrate exquisite skill on the dance floor, effortlessly performing the waltz, cha-cha-cha, and Charleston in easy succession. An open-floor ballroom dancing session then began, and despite my efforts to the contrary, Captain Yates repeatedly demonstrated his inability to keep up with my expert dance moves. Though I must confess that he admirably performed the role of a borderline comely blushing dance partner with ease. Finally, seeing an opportunity to closely examine Colonel Rehnquist to determine whether he were an android or perhaps even the Time Lord criminal known as the Master in disguise, we twirled hand in hand and miraculously without any bruised feet or ankles, over to him and Miss G at the center of the dance floor. But then the unexpected occurred. To explain, the music slipped to a faster contemporary number, and we had to switch dance partners. Bemused, I found myself furiously spinning around the room, and finally into Miss G's dancing arms. Fortunately, or so I had thought, she did not recognize me, as I felt a sense of euphoria sweep over me as my dance moves became even more graceful and perfected. Through this strange haze, I saw Captain Yates with a smaller man, whose moustache was as ridiculous as mine. Suddenly, they signaled for me to step away from Miss G, and then she and the smaller man engaged in fisticuffs, with a shocking yet well-placed upper hook on her opponent's part to Miss G's chin, finishing her off. The victorious man then removed his moustache and short-haired wig, shook his head out of a hairnet, and then revealed him, herself, to be the real Miss G. Still slightly dazed, I subsequently found myself in the arms of a person whom I assumed to be another willing dance partner, but who turned out to be a man in a white frilled shirt and black velvet smoking jacket. The Brigadier, who had been on a tracking mission with Miss G to expose alien invader species 315. Addendum. Please see Miss G's full mission report, Unit Secret File, codename Imitator Affair. As he closes out the report, Benton sighs in memory of the Brigadier shouting at him on the Pepper Pot dance floor.
Sergeant Benton, stand to attention.
His disapproving face barely holding its rigorous form as he attempted to mask his amusement at Captain Yates dressed as a lady and the fact that the two of them had appropriated clothing from the doctor's wardrobe. A wistful look then forms across Benton's face as he remembers that he had later tried to dance with the real Miss Grant after Unit had temporarily shut down the club. But then Captain Yates, who was still in his dress, interceded, offering himself as Miss Grant's dance partner in his stead, with the biting words, "RHIP, Sergeant." In reply, Benton had asked,
"RHIP? Really, Captain? You're going to try and pull rank again at this point? Sounds more like romance has its privileges to me."
"That's right, Sergeant. See it as you will," Yates had said with a calm voice, but what Benton saw as being delivered via a smug smile. "I am your superior officer, after all."
"My superior officer indeed, Captain Yates," Benton laughs to himself as he files the report. "But not the superior dancer," he adds,
remembering the sight of Miss Grant crying out in pain as her enthusiastic yet hopelessly clumsy dance partner began to step on her poor toes with his prancing silver heels.